Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Show. This is UFC 300 Part 2. If you have not watched our UFC 300 Part 1 show, that should already be out, so go and check that out as well after you listen to this. If you have checked it out, welcome. Welcome to Part 2. You're clearly a hardcore MMA fan. You're interested in every single fight on UFC 300.
Why wouldn't you be?
Why wouldn't you be? It's absolutely stacked. Joining me as always is Stuart Huffan. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, you're asking me our opinion. We've been sitting here for about the last 3 hours.
Yeah, so, been lovely.
Yeah, but for the purposes of this, yeah, I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Good, lovely. Well, moving on. UFC 300 Part 2. Before we get into that, let's talk about our sponsor, Ferocious Fightwear. They do amazing rash guards, shorts, wraps, mouth guards, and everything for your fighter needs. So please do check out Ferocious Fightwear. As we said in our previous episode, we saw them at Cage Warriors Southeast that we were at this weekend. Lovely, lovely guys supporting grassroots MMA. So because they support grassroots MMA, because they support us and this show that hopefully you're enjoying, please support them and check out ferociousfightwear.com. For all your fighter clobber needs.
Yep, go give them a follow on the Instagram account as well. Okay, so we've discussed the main card, which is stacked, and we are now going to start. I mean,
this
prelims,
is so crazy, isn't it? This is the last fight on the prelims. Former light heavyweight champion Jiří Prochazka, an absolute fan favorite, one of the most exciting fight styles you will ever see, taking on Alexander Rakic, who's coming back from injury. Again, number 2 light heavyweight in the world against the number 5 light heavyweight in the world. And it's on the prelims.
This tops most fight night cards, right?
And then some. You think about some of the fight night cards we've had of late, the Apex cards, all of that. People would be desperate for this to be headlining those cards. And it's on the prelims. It's absolutely crazy.
Look at Jiří, man.
Look at you. I love it. Look at him.
So fucking cool, man, doesn't he? Just some kind of mad fucking Viking stroke samurai. He just looks fucking great. And the way he carries himself, he's just got a really nice manner about him. And he absolute sort of consummate martial artist.
Yeah.
Love
like
it.
Old school martial artist as well. I mean, yeah, if his character came up on like Tekken or Street Fighter or something, I'm picking him every day of the week.
All day.
I mean, the storyline of this fight, or a big part of the storyline of this fight, is going to be what kind of Rakic do we see? Because Rakic has been out for nearly 2 years. He last fought Jan Blachowicz in May of 2022. Rakic really badly injured his leg, and it was one of those really innocuous ones where I think he got kicked in one leg but then stepped back on the other leg, and it was the other leg that was really badly damaged. He sort of just crumbled and the fight was over. And you always say, like with football, it's the innocuous ones where it wasn't necessarily a big challenge. You're just running and all of a sudden you pull up. They're the ones you know are really bad, like when someone's just gone down and there's not even been anyone around him. And with this, I think it's possibly something similar where it wasn't even the leg that took the kick. It wasn't, he just stepped back and his leg went. And then you know something really, really bad's going on there. So what kind of Rakic will we see in this fight? Some fighters don't believe in ring rust. I'll tell you now, if ring rust is real for Alexander Rakic, the last thing you want after 2 years out of the cage is to be staring down Jiří Procházka, who's going to be coming at you, bouncing around, throwing spinning attacks like some frigging Easter bunny of death. He's just going to be, this is going to be going nuts.
Them t-shirts are available on Jiří's website, by the way.
Oh, can we do that? Can we get some Jiří Procházka merch and just put Easter bunny of death?
We've literally just got past Easter. We could have just really made our money then.
Oh, he is though. He bounces around all over the shop, just spinning elbows. You just ask Dominic Reyes. I mean, oh my God, what a phenomenal fighter he is. Rakic is a good striker, much more kind of conventional in his striking than a Jiří Procházka.
Most people are conventional compared to Jiří, though, aren't they?
It's true.
Because his striking is so erratic and odd.
It's crazy. I don't know. If you're Rakic, are you thinking, get this fight to the ground, test Jiří's ground game out? I mean, Rakic isn't necessarily known for his grappling, but he can grapple a little bit. But at least what that might do is it might ease him into the fight. Again, if we're talking about coming off a 2-year layoff, if we're talking about ring rust and all that kind of stuff, I wonder if you're thinking, take this fight down to the ground and just ease yourself into the fight.
Yeah.
Because if you're just a bit unsure, if you have any apprehension at all, and you've got Jiří Procházka just flying knees and spinning elbows and all that stuff all around you, bouncing in and out, I just think that must be such a scary thing to have in front of you when you're not 100% confident, when you're like, oh, I haven't been in this position for 2 years. So I think get it to the ground early, ease into the fight, maybe wear down on Jiří, take some of that explosivity and that, you know, that speed away from him, and then maybe you can find yourself ease into the fight a little bit.
How much do you think it fires fighters up? So Rakic, right, theoretically could have fought somebody maybe a little bit further down the rankings just to kind of get that ring rust out and see how he moves again in the octagon. Obviously he's training at a high level, but you know, your comeback after 2 years out is Jiří. Do you think when they get that phone call from the UFC saying, do you want to fight on UFC 300, do you think that means so much more than potentially, as we said, this could headline another card? Do you think that it's just like with 300, it's Procházka, this is a huge fight opportunity, you know, to get a lot of eyes on me? Do you think that the words 300 have really cut it for the fighters? Do you think, I wonder if there's more money involved? Do you think, like, because it's such a big event?
I don't think it's more money.
I wouldn't have thought so. I think, could that have made more money headlining another card? I don't know. The prestige of 300, is it as big as, I don't know, look at 298.
I think in terms of financially, my understanding, and we'd maybe have to ask fighters this, if you're a main event, you get a little bit more money. Like, you get your standard contract, but I think if you're the main event, I think you do get a little bit more money because you're being asked to do 5 rounds and all that kind of stuff, and the card is based around you. I maybe even think you might get a tiny bit more money if you're a co-main event, but I'm not 100% sure of that. But you might get more money for being a main or a co-main event. Other than that, I think you're basically just on your contract the whole time, unless, obviously, if you're a champion, you're getting pay-per-view points and stuff like that. For this, I think it's more about how many people are going to be watching this. There's going to be people that are watching this is their first ever UFC event. There'll be someone that's going, I'm having a UFC, probably not in Europe, but in America. Mm-hmm. Saying, I'm going to have a UFC 300 party. I really like the UFC, even though they're a casual fan. Come on over. Everyone come over, grab some beers. We'll watch UFC, whatever. And there'll be people going, I don't really watch UFC, but 300 is meant to be a good one. It's like going to watch WrestleMania or something like that. If you're not really a WWE fan, you might go, oh, well, I'll watch WrestleMania because everyone's going on about it, so I'll watch it. That might be a similar thing with UFC 300. And so being on the prelims of that, and people going, oh, well, let's check this out. Let's watch this because it's a huge main event, like, or it's a huge major card, the greatest UFC card of all time. Let's do that. People will be watching it that have never watched UFC before. So the numbers of people watching that could transition into being followers on your Instagram, that could transition into being fans that follow your fights from then on, that could mean a huge thing for these fighters and could really propel them into title opportunities and stuff like that. And Alexander Rakic is that guy that could benefit from that.
Yeah.
So I think he really could benefit in that way. I think Prohajka's probably already got a crazy fan base. And I think those casual fans I've mentioned that might only just be tuning into UFC because it's 300 that maybe haven't seen Prohajka before, surely he's going to give them a show as well, and they could end up becoming huge Jiří Prochazka fans. Yeah. And yeah, I think the benefits of being on 300, even on the prelims, probably outweighs being the main event of a fight night card.
Yeah, I hear you. As you see this one playing out, who you pick him?
I'm picking Prochazka because A, I love him, and B, I just think I do, and B, I think that the ring rusting is real. I think the ring rusting is real. Can Rakic catch him? Yes. But I just... And also, seeing Jiří at the top of this division, it's just fun, isn't it?
Yeah, man.
It's just fun. I want to see him in big fights. I want to see him maybe rematch Pereira or fight Jamal Hill or fight a Johnny Walker who... didn't we have Lerone Murphy on and we talked about the prospect of Jiří Prochazka versus Johnny Walker, and Lerone Murphy said, I think the referee's going to wear a head guard for that fight because there's slims
pressure
everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Shout out Lerone Murphy. Just been announced he's going to be fighting Edson Barboza.
Huge fight.
Huge fight.
Great opportunity for Lerone. We should get him back on.
Absolutely. I lean with you again on this one. We're agreeing on lots today, Mr. Harrison, which is very rare. But yeah, I'm going for Jiří as well. Aljo versus Cater is next up.
Yes.
So this is Aljo's debut at the weight, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm.
And it's an interesting one. I don't know whether this was the right fight to make or not for Sterling. Like, there's been a bit of talk about the fact that, you know, he's a former champion, but he's gone up in weight and he's taking on like the eighth ranked Calvin Kattar. I think it sort of does make sense, but what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, he was talking about moving up, obviously, all the time, the mirror fight. Chats were being had and stuff like that. And obviously he's chose this moment to do it. I think had he have done it when he had the belt, maybe he wouldn't be fighting Kaya. Maybe it would
of course
been
not. It would have been
way more interesting. Yeah. I don't know. This doesn't piss me off, this fight. I'm quite happy with it.
Yeah.
I think it's a good fight to kind of, and by saying just sort of test what you've got, I think he's being disrespectful to Kaya because I think he's legit. And this is no walk in the park for Aljo. Do you see it being a pretty straightforward win for Aljo then?
No, I don't, I'm not 100%
sure. I'll tell you what I'll ask you is, who would you have preferred if you could have, that would have made sense?
For Aljo's debut at featherweight? Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think at the moment, the way the division has worked out, let me just try and pull up like the UFC rankings here. The way the division has worked out is that this is sort of maybe the best opportunity because, so Topuria is the champ.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Aljo's the champ, he's probably not going straight up to fight the champ. And we all know that there's been problems with Aljo and Dana White and the UFC and all that before, so they're not going to do him any favours. Mm. Volkanovski is not going to fight Volk because Volk's earned an immediate rematch. Yeah. Brian Ortega, they could have done that fight, but Brian's only fought recently, so timing-wise, that wouldn't have worked out. Wouldn't have happened at 300. Yair Rodriguez fought Brian Ortega, lost. Again, could have been a great fight for Sterling. I think both those fights could have made a lot of sense, but I think with the way the division has played out and the timings of everything, that obviously couldn't happen. Is Evloev going to fight Sterling? I don't know. I mean, it's a harder matchup for Aljo. If Aljo comes into this division and takes on Evloev, that is a much harder fight for him than Calvin Kattar. Arnold Allen.
Injured.
Yeah, technically, yes, injured. Josh Emmett. Yeah, sure. But I mean, in terms of the marriage of what's available and what's a really good matchup for Aljo, I think this is maybe the best one he could have. Because Keita is coming back off of... how long has he been out? He's coming off that injury loss to Arnold Allen.
Over the knee, yeah.
And so he's been out for like the best part of a year and a half. He's got a mixed record, Calvin Keita. You know, I think he's a 6-5 in 11 fights. And but he's only lost to really good guys. Like, he's lost to Moicano, who's now up in weight. He lost to Max Holloway. No shame there. Lost to Josh Emmett by a split decision. I did score it for Emmett, but a lot of people thought Calvin Keita won that fight. So that's one of those controversial ones. And then Arnold Allen was an injury, even though I think Arnold would have beaten him. And then Zabit Magomedsharipov, who people... If you've only been watching the UFC a couple of years, you missed what maybe Zabit was doing way back. And Zabit retired to go and become a doctor or something. Like, Zabit was like champion in the making. Like, I was a huge
I can't believe we never got to see that play out.
Oh, man, that is... I'm gutted. Yeah. Zabit Magomedsharipov, one of the greatest fighters, I think, that could have been.
So exciting.
And it never happened. Not because of anything he did. He just retired. He decided, nah, don't fancy it anymore. I want to be a doctor and mend people rather than break them up.
It was either, you know, I think it was either him or Emmett, and I don't know, maybe Aljo just thought if Emmett was even in them discussions.
Well, Emmett's also a good defensive wrestler, and he's got heavy hands.
I'm sure if he just watched the Bryce Mitchell fight, he thought, do you know what, I don't really fancy that could hurt.
And I don't think Cater's really fought many really good wrestlers. Like, the list of people I just spoke about there, Emmett doesn't really use his wrestling much. Max Moicano, Arnold Allen doesn't use his wrestling as much as I think he should. Zabit can take you down. He's got that Dagestani thing, but he was more of a striker. He threw spinning attacks and stuff like that. Like, so he wasn't your natural kind of Dagestani wrestler. So again, if Sterling can get hold of Keita and take him down, I think Keita's in a world of trouble, because we know Sterling, once he takes your back, it's sort of game over. But Sterling did do really well at bantamweight because he had a lot of physical advantages. He was long, but he was incredibly muscular. He was big for the weight class. He could dominate people on the ground. Can he do that 10 pounds heavier? Some people, he will just have the skill set to be able to do that too. But if Keita can get to his feet, I'm not a big fan of Sterling striking. I don't think Sterling striking is particularly great. So if Keita can keep this on the feet more often than not, I think he could piece Sterling up. I think defensively, Sterling striking is not good.
I mean, that would be catastrophic. You move to that weight class and you get beaten
by the eighth ranked guy who's coming off an injury. It's a real interesting one. It's all going to be about, for me, how does Sterling's physical attributes match up in a weight class above. And if he can take Keita down, who's a long run strike, and keep him there, I think he could be successful at featherweight. But I think also there's a possibility that if Keita's that extra 10 pounds of weight makes it harder to keep Keita down, or someone like him down.
But imagine that you're going to the ground with someone like Brian Ortega. Like, that's true. That's a different beast, isn't
it? That's a fight I'd love to see, though. You think Brian Ortega's jiu-jitsu against Sterling's grappling as well? I'd love to see that fight.
Yeah, I think Ortega will be too big for him.
Yeah, maybe. I look at an Arnold Allen and I think Allen's so strong. I mean, we got to hug him the other day and feel his back again.
It wasn't even just that. We was queuing up to get them pizzas outside. There was a couple of the fighters had come out from the change room. They were still sort of in their fight wear. And they were like, oh, God, shit, it's Arnold Allen. And they were all having fights with him. One of them patted him on the back and it just went, food. There was no like noise if you patted me on the back. It was just like, oh, someone just patted rock. Like, it was just made this really thud, and it was like, yeah, that man's got one serious back on him. Right, okay. Should we move on to the next?
I'm just trying to think if there's any other points about this, because I do think this is a fascinating fight, the Aljo versus Keita fight. But no, I think that's maybe about it. I don't know. I think this could be really interesting going forward. Like, if Keita wins, good for him, great. But if Aljo wins, which is going to be more fascinating, see Aljo's progression in the featherweight division. If he wins, that's the storyline I'm more interested in seeing play out.
Of course.
And seeing where he goes from there could be really good. And where would Aljo go next? Because he's a former champion, does he you know, leapfrog a bunch of people? Or does he have to work his way out? Will he have to fight an Arnold Allen and then a Brian Ortega or something like that to get to the belt? Or will he just go, come on, I'm a former champ, I've beat this guy, give me a number one contender fight against Brian Ortega, job's a good one.
Interesting.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Interesting. This is very interesting.
It is.
So we've just put up the pictures of Holly Holm versus Kayla Harrison. Kayla Harrison making a UFC debut after much success over in the PFL. I mean, for me, I would have switched the Bo Nickel fight for this. I think if they're trying to create a big superstar in Kayla Harrison, because we know Kayla Harrison because she's the superstar in PFL and such, but do a lot of other kind of part-time, casual sort of MMA fans know she is? Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. I mean, I want to give you a bit of a rundown of Kayla Harrison's story in a minute, just because I watched a little kind of UFC connected thing where they were kind of introducing her to the UFC fans, and her story is heartbreaking but also inspirational and brilliant, and I really want to get
Blake Harrison
get onto that.
Tell me the story.
Tell you the story. Well, again, I'm going to not do it the service that it deserves, but Kayla Harrison, obviously multi-time PFL champion. We'll get into this, but up at lightweight. So she's fighting at bantamweight now, 135. She was fighting at 155 in the PFL. Prior to that, she was fighting, I think, at 170 pounds in judo, where she won two Olympic gold medals, one of those in London. Now, Kayla Harrison's story is as I said, it's heartbreaking because she went to judo from a very, very early age, and at the age of 16, admitted to or told her mum that she had been sexually abused by her judo coach for about 8 years, which is...
8 years?
That's what I
thought you said.
I heard,
a year.
No, eight is what I've heard, which is just... There's no words for that. It's such a horrific thing for anyone to go to, for a child of that age to go through. It's absolutely horrific. Thankfully, the police obviously got involved. The guy that did it, that was responsible, was put away for 10 years. In my opinion, should have been much longer. But from that... And from this really dark place that she went into as a result of that, she kept pursuing judo, went to some obviously like new coaches. I think she moved to Boston. I can't remember where she was before that. And she teamed up with some people in Boston to do judo. And it led her to two Olympic gold medal wins, which is phenomenal. Like, what an amazing achievement. And then she said after the judo competitions were done, she was in a bit of a darker place again. She was like, what do I do from here? And then she found MMA. And after MMA, she's then gone into the PFL, won multiple world titles, won the tournament, won that $1 million prize on multiple occasions. And also, during that time, her mother, I think, had a stroke, and her mother was the legal guardian of her niece and nephew, who were very, very young at the time. And because her mother had a stroke, Kayla adopted them. So she's gone through all of this horrible stuff that she's been through, then achieved greatness in judo in the Olympics, achieved greatness in the PFL by becoming a world champion on multiple occasions, and also during that time has had to take on two children, take on her niece and nephew as her own children. I think she now sees them as, you know, her son and her daughter. I mean, on so many levels, that is... I almost get emotional talking about it. What a life. To be at the lowest of lows and to have gone through something so horrific and now to be an inspiration to many people just in the combat sports world, but also her own niece and nephew that now probably look up to her as their mum.
Yeah.
Like, to take them on. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's quite an incredible thing for someone to have done and to have gone through, and now she's in the UFC. Yeah, it's I only want good things for her because of what she's been through. I really want everyone to be sort of championing her and wanting her to do well. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Holly Holm. Mm. Holly Holm is responsible for one of the greatest knockouts of all time. She is, you know, a fan favorite in terms of her personality. She's gone through things as well. But I really want to see Kayla Harrison do great things. The only thing that concerns me is how do you go from being the PFL champion at 155 pounds to then competing at 135 in the UFC? That really, really concerns me about whether she can A, make the weight healthily, and B, perform to the level we know she can perform at 135 pounds against a great competitor in Holly Holm. I don't know. It's the story of this fight almost is going to play out on the scales rather than in the octagon in a lot of ways. And we're going to see how Kayla looks on the scales. We're going to see how she rehydrates, how things go for her in those situations. And yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
My initial thoughts are, I'm a big fan of Holly Holm, and she's got a good resume against very, very well-established judo fighters. But I don't know. Kayla Harrison's dominance in the PFL is one thing, but the PFL is not the UFC.
And also, just to flag up, her last fight in the PFL, I believe, or no, she last fight, I think she, I'm gonna have to pull this up, since she beat Aspen Ladd, but she lost to Larissa Pacheco. She'd won two PFL tournaments, I believe, and then in the final of the previous PFL tournament, or last PFL tournament that she did, she lost to Larissa Pacheco, who also, by the way, is looking fantastic. Like, Larissa Pacheco is really, really good. And Kayla had, I think, two wins over her previously, but then lost. So she wasn't completely dominant in the PFL either.
It's very apparent that I'm sure Holly's going to keep this on her feet if she can and do what she does best, which is fantastic movement and just different level striking. And but obviously, Kayla Harrison's skill set lies within her, you know, her judo. And I don't know. I'd be interested to see what happens if Kayla Harrison loses her debut in the UFC, because that all of a sudden throws a massive spanner in the hype train that I'm sure the UFC probably paid good money to get her to the UFC. She's been beaten by Holly, who is great, but probably isn't level fighter as she was when she beat Ronda a fair few years back now. But I don't know. Is this too much for a UFC debut?
I don't know.
I don't know if it's too much.
How
for
do you
a
play
debut.
It without it not being like, oh, well, who's she fighting? Who's this? What's the point of this?
Like, I Taylor think you Harrison. Have to throw in. I think it's. I think in some ways it's very good matchmaking because Holly Holm's such a big name, and I think that's what you need. And I think if Kayla is 80% Kayla, I think she can still beat Holly Holm. I think Holly Holm is phenomenal on the feet. I think she isn't what she used to be, though. And I think as much as Holly Holm's grappling has massively improved, Kayla is another level. So if Kayla can get over hold of her, and also if Kayla can drop down and then rehydrate in a really safe, healthy way,
I mean, just look at the picture. There's such significant difference in size.
There'll be a huge size difference. Holly Holm has fought at 145 before, but Kayla has only ever had one fight, I believe, at 145 before, and she had to cut to make that weight. So again, I'm really fascinated to see how she cuts down to 145, and I hope it's all done in a very safe, healthy manner. But as you said, if Kayla doesn't win this fight, what happens from there? Because do the UFC want to bring back the featherweight title just for Kayla Harrison? They can, but they clearly don't want to, because otherwise they would have made Kayla fight at 145 rather than making her drop that extra 10 pounds to go to bantamweight. So the UFC don't want the featherweight title back. If Kayla loses this fight or looks terrible or doesn't make the weight, what do you do with her? I don't know, because the other thing is she's probably... Holly's obviously got loads of fandom and stardom from the Ronda Rousey knockout, but is there anyone in the bantamweight division, maybe Holly, I don't know, that can match Kayla's star power? Because in America as well, and with the MMA like hardcore fans who've been watching the PFL and all that stuff, Kayla's huge. Kayla's a big deal. She's been on Helwani's show loads. She, you know, that everyone speaks of her very highly. Is there anyone, like Raquel Pennington is not as big a star as Kayla Harrison?
No, not at all.
You know, I'm trying to think who else is in that kind of band. Juliana Pena? I don't think, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. It's hard for us to get a grasp on, you know, just how big she is in the States.
It is,
you know.
Correct, yeah. Especially being a two-time Olympic gold medalist for the USA in judo. I mean, that's massive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see how
it goes.
I'm
really excited for this fight.
Yeah, I mean, I love Holly. I never want to root against Holly, but because of what Kayla's been through her whole life, I really want to see her achieve great things. So I want to see Kayla win. I'm almost as excited for this fight as any other fight on the card. I know that sounds mental.
Okay.
I'm a huge Diego Lopez fan. We've just brought up an image of Diego Lopez versus Sadiq Youssef. I really like Diego Lopez. I think he could be a really big deal. This is a huge step up for him in Sadiq Youssef. Sadiq Youssef is ranked 13th. Diego Lopez came in on short notice to face Movsar Evloev, put on a really good performance, one of Evloev's toughest fights, but sadly lost it. Then has fought two unranked blokes, but got first round finishes over both of them. He's very big for the weight class. Very good jiu-jitsu, gets submissions off his back. He's always trying to attack that submissions, never kind of static in his guard or anything like that. He's got heavy hands as well because he's big for the weight class. I do think his striking needs improving, but he can hit hard, as we've seen in fights. Yeah, I think this is a really fun fight. And Sadiq Youssef can be at times a bit safe, but at other times can be really, I won't want to say reckless. He's always, I think he knows what he's doing, but he can put the pressure on. Like in that first round and a bit against Edson Barbosa in his last fight, which he did lose eventually, but he almost finished Edson Barbosa in the first round. And he looked really good. Now, if he comes forward and tries to negate what will be, I'm assuming, a big reach advantage for Diego Lopez, we could get a real scrap in this fight. It could be really exciting. And I think Diego Lopez will just be throwing big hands. Sadiq Youssef could be trying to do the same. And I just think it could be a really, really fun fight.
You think this
fight
is a little surprise one on the card that people are going to be, whoa?
Yeah, I think it could be. I mean, don't get me wrong. Nothing is going to surpass Max versus Justin. It can't. Pereira versus Hill, there's going to be, I think, a knockout in that fight. Bo Nickel will be a quick finish, but whatever, he's a huge, huge favourite. As we said at the start of the show, if you haven't listen to that. Please go and watch our UFC 300 Part 1 show, which is all about the main card. This is obviously about the prelims. But yeah, there's a lot going on this from top to bottom. And the first fight that we haven't even gotten to yet, Cody versus Figueiredo, that's probably going to end in a knockout as well. But I think this is going to be the surprise because these two are the ones that neither of them's a massive name. I can't take my eyes off of Diego Lopez's belly button. Just have a quick look at that. It's like it's like a big Cheerio.
Yeah. Yeah, he's literally got a polo for a belly button.
He does. It's really circular. It's like you could throw that at someone drowning and they could just kind of use it to survive.
You could pop a Tic Tac in there and it'd hold it.
Yeah, Diego Lopez, the strangest belly button in MMA. But a fantastic fighter who I'm a really big fan of.
Can't take my eyes off it.
Yeah, no, once you see it, you can't take your eyes off it.
I'll plug my phone in and charge it off of that.
If you're watching this on YouTube, hopefully, Chris, cut to a wide shot and Stu's face isn't blocking it. That Diego Lopez's belly button is something to behold. But if you're listening to this on podcast, just Google Diego Lopez and try and find a picture of him with his shirt off and look at that belly button. It is like just someone going, it's like his belly button's whistling. That'd be great trash talk if Diego Lopez lands a shot on Sadiq Youssef and Diego Lopez's belly button just goes, like the guy from Mortal Kombat. yeah, so big fan of this fight. I think it could be a really, really good one. And I think if Diego Lopez wins it, I think he could be onto really good things, really, really good things. So I'm hoping Diego Lopez wins. I wouldn't be surprised if Sadiq Youssef kind of shuts down the hype train.
Yeah.
But if Diego Lopez wins this, I think he could be onto some really great things.
Absolutely. And hopefully people won't be looking at his belly button because they will be looking at his tattoo, which is one of the worst tattoos I think I've ever seen in the UFC. It looks like it's just been done in marker pen.
It does. It says dream, believe, and make it happen, which is very similar to Michael Bisping's, what was it, conceive, believe, achieve, when he was taking a piss out of Luke Rockhold, which I absolutely love. So that is, that's maybe not the best tattoo in the world.
No.
But it's a positive message.
Absolutely, and we're sending positive vibes. Okay. This has got the makings of a great scrap, this has.
This is another one. This card's crazy. Mm. Such a crazy card. We've just pulled up Jalen Turner versus Renato Money Moicano, who, to be fair, I'm a big Jalen Turner fan. I always like the tall, skinny guys because, I want people to represent me.
Yeah.
And I always want to see Jalen Turner do well. 6'3" in the lightweight division. That's very, very tall. Mm. And I want to see him do well. And I do like him. I think he's a fun fighter. But I don't know what I want to see more, Jalen Turner win or a post-fight interview from Manny Moicano. Right. He's talking about, my dad's just had a kid, he's 60, I've got a new brother.
That was such a mental interview, wasn't it?
Mental. And then the one before that was just him, was he saying like, MF-er, like every other word.
Every other word.
But also then he was like, my Cano wants money. It's like, yeah, don't we all, mate? I do think I want to see Jalen Turner win, but I'm becoming more interested in Moicano. And he's got a fun fight style
as
well.
He has got a fun fight style, and he knows if he gets the microphone at this, he's going to be the biggest audience he's ever had.
100%. He's going to go off. I wouldn't surprise me if he says something genuinely quite controversial and like I start going, oh no, I don't like you anymore, Moicano.
I know.
But look, Moicano's also, he's been kind of successful against taller strikers. No one the size of Jalen Turner. But, he dealt with Calvin Kattar. Mm-hmm. And when I was rewatching that fight in the lead up to this, I was thinking, oh, did he take Kattar down and deal with that? And I was looking at it in a kind of like what to expect from Sterling and Kattar and also this fight with Jalen Turner. But he didn't. He was boxing him up on the feet, which really, really shows how good Moicano can be when he's doing that on the feet. He also decided he didn't want to strike with Jai Herbert.
Excuse me.
Thank you, sir. And he ended up taking Jai Herbert down and just sort of smothering him and then submitting him, I believe. So Moicano is good everywhere. Now, Jalen Turner has had to fight some grapplers, so he should be able to stop those takedowns well enough. He did well enough against Mateus Gamrot at times during their fight. Again, a fight that Gamrot won, but I felt like Jalen Turner maybe edged, but the judges did not agree with me. So Turner's going to need to be careful because Moicano can land big strikes, but he can also take you down and submit you. So, yeah, he's gone to a decision twice in his last three, which makes me think, you know, the longer the fight goes, that maybe does favour Moicano because Jalen Turner's had a lot of first-round finishes. I'm going to ask you a question now.
Ask me a question.
I'm going to ask you a question. Jalen Turner has gone to a decision. You can play along at home.
Okay.
Jalen Turner has gone to a decision four times in his career, 21 fights. How many of those four decisions out of 21 fights has he won?
One.
Zero. Zero. If you were playing along at home, I've probably given that away too quickly. I should have had a build-up to the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. Yeah, he's never won a decision. Never won a decision. So, yeah, Jalen Turner, incredibly dangerous. Incredibly dangerous. Look what he did to Bobby Green and a variety of other opponents in that first round.
I think that Jalen's range is going to be key in this. I think he's just going to be teeing off with them big long arms.
I agree with you. I think he can land a knee if Moicano's coming in for a takedown as well. Jalen Turner could lift his knee and catch him on the chin. But Jalen Turner cuts an awful lot of weight. There was that video of him sparring with Khamzat Chimaev. Khamzat was huge. And Jalen looked a similar-ish size to him. And it was like, how the hell do you cut down to lightweight? And I think that the amount of weight he cuts probably has a significantly negative effect on his cardio. And I think if Moicano is still there, 8 minute, 9 minute, and then going 10 into round three, we could see the momentum really shift.
Man.
And Moicano could start putting it on Jalen Turner. A bit like what happened with the Dan Hooker fight as well. Dan Hooker and Jalen Turner had a phenomenal fight. Yeah, we could see Moicano take over in the later stages of this fight. So I'd like to see Jalen get it over and done with early because if it goes into that 8th minute, we could see Moicano coming on strong. Is there any other things I want to talk about in this fight? I think that's kind of it for this one. Moving on, Jessica Andrade versus Marina Rodriguez.
Jessica Andrade's never been boring fights, is she?
No, she's a phenomenal fighter, Jessica Andrade.
I love her fight style. I love that her boxing's fantastic, and she's just a slugger, isn't she? She just gets in there. She's just tough as old boots, and I'm hyped for this one.
Andrade had a crazy 2003. She had like five fights in 2003, bookended with wins, but three losses in the middle. But three losses to really good fighters. Erin Blanchfield up at 125, who I know lost recently to Manon Firo, but for me, Erin Blanchfield is a future champion still. She's only 24. Yan Jonan, who's fighting for the belt on this very card. And Tatiana Suarez, who...
Well, we've been discussing in the last show, haven't we?
Yeah, I believe could be a champion at 115, but she keeps getting injured. So if it wasn't for the injury, she might already be the champion. So no shame in any of those losses. And then she came back with a big win against Mackenzie Dern most recently.
So if Andrade wins here, let's say she wins, what's that do for her?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I don't know. I mean, again, going down the rankings... Jonan is having her title shot now.
Where's Andrade currently ranked?
Fourth.
Right.
And Rodriguez is sixth. So again, it's weird because Andrade has been flicking between weight classes, but she's still ranked fourth. And she's had, what was it, of her last three fights, is she 1-2? Jonan and Suarez, 1-2. So, you know, I'm amazed that she's as highly ranked as she is. But when you look at... look at what's going on in this division, which we spoke about in the previous show. We spoke about strawweight is slowing down. Mm. Zhang Weili is not the most active champion. Zhao Nan hasn't fought for 10 months. Mm. Suarez is always injured. Lemos, who's ranked above Andrade, lost her title shot most recently.
Yeah.
Andrade is ranked fourth. I think that's it. Zhao Nan, Suarez, Lemos. We've mentioned them. Then comes Andrade. Then it's Vienna Janderoba, who doesn't have a fight booked, but she is on a 3-fight win streak. But again, do people care or know much about her? I don't think they do. I don't think the fans are really like clamoring for a Vienna Janderoba title shot. And then after that, it's Marina Rodriguez who she's fighting here. So in a weird way, even though these two women, because Rodriguez has had a mixed run lately, she put together a 4-fight win streak, then lost to Lemos in a number one contender fight. Then she lost to Janderoba, but then beat Michelle Waterson most recently. But Michelle Waterson is kind of coming towards the end of her career. Yeah. She's not highly ranked.
Yeah.
So both these women have had a mixed kind of year or two. But they could, in a weird way, stumble into a title shot with a win here.
If Andrade puts on a ferocious knockout and gets it done sharpish, I think it puts her in the mix big time.
Well, Andrade way more than Rodriguez because Andrade has the name. She's a former champion. She's had big fights with really big big names in the division. She's got more of a chance, I think, than Marina Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
But even Marina Rodriguez, if she wins this fight, she can't leapfrog Janderoba, but she could stumble into a title shot. If an injury happens, if something else happens, Suarez is still out. Like,
if
there's definitely a world in which she fights for a belt soon if she comes off a win here.
If Janan wins, I mean, would Jan get an instant rematch?
Maybe, especially if they can do it in China.
Yeah.
Because again, money talks. For me, I don't think she's got enough title defences for me to want an immediate rematch.
I know your rules. But what I'm saying is if Janan wins, And as does Rodriguez, that's not happening in that fight because that is not... Andrade, if she wins and Janan wins, that's a fight.
Well, I think that's less likely to happen because Janan knocked her out so easily in a previous fight. And that only happened a little while ago.
Mm.
Like 10 months ago or whatever. That's less than a year ago that she was knocked out. I don't think you go straight back in for the champ.
You think Rodriguez would get that? I don't think so. I don't think there's enough star power there.
I think they'd remake the Zhang fight.
In China.
Or they'd say, Rose, can you pop back down to 115, please? Because they'd need a bigger name. Because otherwise, Lemos is up there, higher ranked. But I don't really see that. I think they'd make the immediate rematch because I don't think there's enough stars. And I don't think you can... I'd be more interested in seeing Andrade rematch Zhang Weili.
Okay.
I think that could be... because Zhang Weili beat Andrade for the belt a few years back now in China. I think that Andrade has had obviously mixed results, as we've said, but she's gone up two different weight classes. She always brings it, and her power is a problem for anyone. She has good wrestling as well. Yeah, I would rather see that than Andrade versus Zhao Nan. I think Zhao Nan sort of opens it up to sort of anyone. And I don't know, when we have to see what happens with the return of Tatiana Suarez.
Yeah.
When does she come back? When is she fit and healthy again? And do you just throw her straight into a title shot because you're like, well, we never know if she's going to be fully fit. We can't give her a fight to build up to it. Just give her the title shot. I don't know. Oh.
This is so good.
Bobby Green versus Jim Miller.
Will it be Jim Miller?
Or will it be Jim
Green?
That's what he wants, isn't it? Come on, Bruce. He can't do it. He can't swear it. I don't think Bruce will want to swear in the middle of the octagon.
He's a gent, isn't he? I mean, this is so exciting. Obviously, we're talking Jim Miller, Bobby Green. Bobby Green, you know, win, lose or draw, he's always in a great fight. He's always got charisma pouring out of his ears. And he's just an absolute dude. Jim Miller, I mean, the story's ridiculous, isn't it?
Well, as we said, you know, UFC 100, UFC 200, UFC 300.
Mm.
He beat Matt Danzig at UFC 100 by decision. He beat Takanori Gomi by TKO at UFC 200. UFC 300, does he beat Bobby Green by submission? And complete the hat trick three different wins at 100 events, all by a different method.
Has the all-time record for most fights, 43, yep. and most wins in the UFC, 26.
Yep.
He's been in the UFC since, let me just check my stats, 1984. That's crazy, isn't it?
He was in the UFC before the UFC was
yes,
in the UFC.
Yes, he was. Yes, yeah. No, he's been in the UFC since 2008, which is bananas. And you know what? Just seems like such a nice dude as well.
He does, doesn't he? Like, he seems like a nice guy.
You don't ever hear people talking bad of Jim Miller. And, yeah, I mean, Bobby Green's boxing can be problematic for a lot of people, you know?
Yeah, he'll be fast as well. Mm. Bobby Green will be fast. I'll tell you the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is there was this whole conversation of late about whether Jim Miller deserves to be in the UFC Hall of Fame or not.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently Daniel Cormier came out and said, no, he shouldn't because he was never a champion. But other people have said, well, it's not just about being a champion. When you look at like the UFC Hall of Fame, what do you think is the kind of like criteria for getting in there? And do you think Jim Miller, with all the stats that you've mentioned, the most wins in the UFC, most UFC appearances, wins at UFC 100, 200, maybe 300 after this weekend, do you think someone of Jim Miller's stature, even though he's never been a champion, do you think someone like him deserves to go in the Hall of Fame?
I guess if you're looking at contributions to the organisation,
yeah.
then he's put the graft in, right?
Yeah.
Now, some people might hate me for saying this, but aside from the kind of UFC 300, Jim fucking Miller, and maybe a couple of his more recent fights because people are going, oh my God, Jim Miller, this is his blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. Were people talking massively about Jim Miller 2, 3, 4 years ago? I don't think so.
No.
And I think it's the longevity that's making the headlines yep. and the narrative behind the 300 appearance, which is all fantastic. And I think if you're looking at somebody that has put the, you know, how many fights get cut from the UFC, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, fighters can lose a couple of fights and they're gone.
Or they could just bite someone's arm and they're gone.
And they can do that. But Jim Miller's...
Shout out Igor Severino.
has consistently carried himself well and just sort of plugged away. And yes, he's never won a strap, but I don't think that necessarily detracts too much from what could make someone's contribution to the UFC really interesting. And most fights, most wins... That record's impressive, man. And to retain your position within the industry, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, to still be getting wins over these young, hungry guys coming through the contenders here as well. Look, don't get me wrong. Should Jim Miller, he would be ranked if he beat Bobby Green, he'd be ranked 14th, which is incredible in itself. Should he be a ranked fighter at the toughest weight class in the sport at this age? No. But the fact that he's stuck around for so long and is... taking out contenders on their way through that are trying to come through and achieve great things. And he's saying, no, not today, kid. Go back to the regional scene and come see me in a few years or whatever. Mm. I think that's really impressive.
Yeah.
That's so impressive. And also the fact that he had Lyme disease a few years ago and had to take like, I don't know, was it like 2 years off or whatever and was in a real bad way. So to come back and still be fighting at the highest level in the sport, no, he's not. Top 5, top 10, really shouldn't even be top 15. But it's Jim freaking Miller.
Mm.
And he's done great things. And when you've got the stats that he's got for most appearances, most wins, all that stuff, I think he is worthy of a place in like UFC Hall of Fame. And, you know, that's my thoughts on it. Having said that, when we look at the fight in an isolated kind of way, Jim Miller can make the fight ugly. He can try and get it to the ground and use his grappling and use some ground and pound and stuff like that, which would be the pathway to victory for sure. Is Bobby Green just too quick for him? Bobby Green fights with his hands down as well, so he should be able to defend a lot of those takedowns. He might just box him up. And I think the reality is that we'll probably see Bobby Green winning this one, maybe by decision. But maybe people will be watching it going, Oh, the fairy tale is definitely not happening because Bobby Green's smashing you up.
Does he retire him?
If he gets badly beaten, maybe, but I don't think he's ready to retire. I don't think he will. Mm. I think this is just another milestone for him. I don't think he's necessarily going, this is my last one. I've not heard any rumours of that, that, like, this is my last one. I've just heard, oh, yeah, no, 100, 200, 300, that's cool, and then I'll carry on after that.
Yeah.
So I don't think he will retire. It'd be what scenes it'll be, though, if he takes Bobby Green down, lands a bit of ground and pound, and then gets like a head and arm choke or something like that.
That'd be mental.
There'd be absolute scenes, and then he'll be ranked. He'll be a ranked fighter again. what an amazing career that would be.
I mean, it's hard to sort of say anything sort of negative about Jim Miller because he just seems like an awesome. I fucking love Bobby Green, though, man.
Yeah, he's a wild man.
And I just love that hands by the side, talking to you, just boxing your ears off, and like his hand speed, he's fucking lightning, and I always get excited. I mean, he's had a few tough nights in the octagon, but when he's on form and them hands, he gets put against someone that doesn't really know how to move out of the way because they're coming at him so quick and so varied. Bobby Green's so exciting to watch then, and I can't help but think we might see that.
Yep, I think you're probably right. Now, the first fight of the night, two former champions, Cody Garbrandt, former bantamweight champion, Davison Figueiredo, former flyweight champion. Before we get on to this fight, if you have been enjoying the show, and if you've been enjoying the show over the last few weeks, we have a little link in the show notes for buy us a coffee. We would love it if you would, you know, go, hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for all the content and the MMA chat. So if you want to buy us coffee, I actually don't drink coffee, so I might get a slice of cake.
Get a cake, mate.
Might get a bit of cake. But Stu loves a coffee. You can buy Stu a coffee. There's a link in the show notes on YouTube as well where you can click that and give us a little tip.
There you go.
So thank you very much. On to Cody Garbrandt, Davison Figueiredo. Garbrandt, I can't believe this is the first fight of the night. I'm so excited. This is going to be such an amazing fight to start off. This is, I'm assuming, Fight Pass prelims, right? So this is a reason, this for me is a reason to buy Fight Pass if you don't even have it.
Do you think there'll still be Fight Pass prelims, or do you think that it'll just be prelims?
So. I'm assuming it's Fight Pass prelims.
Because that, fuck me. Like, I mean, there's your reason to subscribe to Fight Pass. Like,
I'm assuming it'll be Jim Miller, Bobby Green, and the first fight, Cody Garbrandt, Davison Figueiredo. So
sign up to Fight Pass, guys.
Fight Pass. I think there'll be two really good fights, actually. Look,
this fight, right? Cody Garbrandt was one of the most exciting fighters to watch.
Yes.
Right, when he was on a tear.
Yep.
Then it kind of went pretty shit.
Pretty quick, yeah.
And I think the stars have aligned well for him here. He got the win, Figgy's moved divisions, and he's just thought, this is a good fight. I don't think it's a good fight for him. I think the last few times I've seen him fight, he fights like a fighter, and this is not coming from a seasoned fighter, but this comes from somebody that seems to look like he doesn't trust his chin that much anymore.
Who, Cody?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know, when we first had Brad Pickett on, he spoke about it, you know, when he, you know, you first start getting KO'd, after that, you're a very different fighter. Now, we know that Cody's got absolute dynamite in his hands. And if he catches you, you are going to sleep.
Yeah, just after Rafael Sanzal, I mean, that was some knockout where his back was against the cage and he just hooked him into oblivion.
Ridiculous. But I don't know. I think Figueiredo's, I think, probably a lot faster. And also, you know, it's got great hands on him. I think this is I think this will be Cody Garbrandt's last fight.
Really?
I think if he loses this, he'll knock it on the head.
Oh, the conversations see that coming.
You think of the conversations we were having a year ago about Cody Garbrandt.
He's only 32. He'd be 33 this year.
Break me down his recent scraps. You got, okay, you got
recent scraps. So again, so he beat, when I say recent, we're going back away here. Oh, Jesus, we're going up a long way here if I go back to Dominic Cruz fight in 2016.
Yeah, so let's forget that era, right? Because we've already said that was fantastic. He was so exciting. Yeah.
So what are we talking kind of like pandemic onwards?
Right, so he lost to...
He won his first...
TJ and then...
So he beat Cruz, then lost to TJ twice. Mm-hmm. Lost the belt and then the rematch. Pedro Munhoz then beat him after that. And it was, again, these losses were round two to TJ, round one to TJ, round one to Pedro Munhoz. So that's pretty epic. That's, you know, that is very difficult to overcome. But then he knocks out Rafael Assuncao in that knockout we just spoke about. He was back against cage. Phenomenal stuff. Breaks the free fight losing streak. Then he goes up against Rob Font, who beats him by decision. Then he drops down to 125 in 2021 and takes on Kai Kara France, who knocks him out in round one. Then he's gone back up to bantamweight and he's taken a big step back in competition. No mugs, but not ranked top high-end opponents. And he's beaten Trevin Jones, and that was by decision. And then he beat Brian Kelleher with a big knockout in round one. Mm-hmm. And now we're up against Davison Figueiredo. So right. Davison Figueiredo is the biggest step up he's had in, I would say, quite some time.
Since Kai Kara France, right?
Definitely since Kai Kara France, but you could argue Davison Figueiredo is a step above Kai Kara France and he's a step above Rob Font. So it's maybe the biggest step up he's had since Pedro Munhoz TJ Dillashaw, which is, you know, quite a while ago now.
Mm. Look, I like Garbrandt. And I just think this, I just don't see this ending well. I think he's, like I say, it's that the way that I interpreted the way he was fighting looked like he was like, he did not want to throw himself in the fire as much because...
Is that him getting more intelligent though? Like he's been in firefights with people and some he's won and a lot he's lost. And has he now gone back to, because the Cody Garbrandt we saw fight Dominic Cruz was almost like the first time I've seen him fight like that. And I don't feel like I've seen him fight like that since. Mm. He fought Dominic Cruz like a matador. Mm. And Dominic Cruz is hardly like a bull in most fights. Like Dominic Cruz plays the matador. Yeah. He out-matadored the matador.
Yeah.
And he was just there making jokes and pointing to where he was and where Cruz had missed him. And he was unbelievable.
His footwork was ridiculous.
It was one of the best performances I've ever seen.
Cruz.
Yeah, it was incredible to watch. Mm. And we've never seen anything like it since. He has tried to get into firefights. He's tried to trust the power of his hands, which, you know, at times it just hasn't worked out
for
him.
But all the time you can trust in them power of your hands because you've got confidence that you can take a shot.
Mm.
Once that's, you've had them knockouts... Then,
but is that's sort of my point. Is he now? It's not about not trusting his chin, although I'm sure after the knockouts he's had, that is in the back of his brain. But is he like, okay, I've got the skills to move around and be a, you know, in and out fighter.
Mm.
Do I do that instead? And if I land big, I'll knock you out. But I'm not going to be there to take the shots. Mm. Is this an evolution of Cody Garbrandt?
I hope it's that he's just fighting smart.
Yeah,
but I just don't think he is.
No, I don't know. I for me, the worry is Figueiredo's really good.
Yeah.
And Figueiredo hits hard. And as we've spoken about, Cody Garbrandt struggles with people that can match him for power. And I think Figueiredo cut a lot of weight to make 125. He's now up at 35, which is maybe more of a natural weight class for him. He's going to be less dehydrated. He'll be able to take a bigger punch. He probably will hit harder. And, you know, even though he's at 35 now, could this be one of the best versions of Davison Figueiredo we see? We'll have to, that remains to be seen. But he looked really great against Rob Font. He mixed it up really well. He took Rob Font down on a couple of occasions, which, you know, again, showed that even though I'm up a weight class, I can still take people down and dominate in the grappling. Going to sneeze again. No, I'm not. For Garbrandt, you know, you could argue that Figgy hasn't fought anyone with the power of Garbrandt. That is one thing that Garbrandt might be telling himself, is that this guy has never been hit by anyone that hits like me. You think Figueiredo for the last like 4 or 5 years has only fought like Brandon Moreno and Rob Font.
Yeah.
Rob Font is not known for punching power. He's a volume striker. And Moreno, he's fought 4 times. And again, Moreno's a great fighter, but again, he's not known for huge knockout power. Mm. And it's down a weight class. So if you're Cody Garbrandt, you're saying, if I land on his chin early, it might make him go, oh, I've never been hit like that before. And that is where Cody can start building confidence and come forward a little bit more. But if I'm Figueiredo, I'm going at him like Kai Kara France did. Just don't even let him get started. Just maraud forward and just go for it with kicks to the body and big right hands and stuff like that. And I wouldn't be surprised if this ends very, very quickly with Garbrandt looking up at the lights.
If Garbrandt sparks him and quick, I mean, what a comeback, a career comeback. He could find himself quite easily, you know, thrown back into the mix because he's a fan favourite. I mean, it ain't going to happen, but...
Look, if Cody Garbrandt can knock out anyone, he really can. Figueiredo, I think, is tough, and maybe his toughness will pull through. Maybe Garbrandt will land and Figueiredo will go, oh, okay, I'm still here, I'm still going.
Yeah.
Because Figueiredo is a tough guy, and again, not cutting that weight means that he won't be as dehydrated and he can take a shot better. But Figueiredo's ranked eighth. Mm. The bantamweight division is pretty stacked, as we said. There's Merab waiting for a title shot. Corey Sandhagen should be getting a title shot. Umar Nurmagomedov is floating around wanting to get big shots.
That you've just mentioned there.
Yeah.
Right? Who do you want to see fight them? Cody Garbrandt or Figgy? I know I want to see, and it ain't Cody Garbrandt. Corey Sandhagen destroys Garbrandt.
I think he destroys Figgy as well, though.
I'd much rather watch Merab versus Figgy than Merab versus Cody Garbrandt.
I think they both go similarly, to be honest. Maybe you're right. I think, to be honest, if Garbrandt wins this fight, then I'd rather see Garbrandt fight those guys because he's beaten Figgy and I don't think that stylistically Figgy is going to cause a huge amount of problems for a Sandhagen, a Merab, or an Umar Nurmagomedov or anything like that. So whoever wins this fight, I'm happy to see them progress and move up the rankings and take people on in front of them. The one thing with Garbrandt is... Garbrandt is marketable.
Mm.
The UFC really like him.
He's handsome, isn't he?
He's quite a handsome devil. Also, he's had beef with Sean O'Malley.
Yeah.
And if you're Sean O'Malley, surely there's a way that you're going, oh, I'd rather not fight Corey and Umar Nurmagomedov. Is there any way I can just beef with Cody Garbrandt and fight him? Because I'll probably knock him out.
Mm.
If you're Sean O'Malley... You're trying to manifest that. You're hoping Garbrandt wins, and you're saying, how can I now make it so that Garbrandt gets a title shot
before any of these never mentions them other two fighters' names.
No, he never mentioned Sandhagen.
I don't blame him, because they're fights you don't want.
No.
But
Merab's doing a good job.
Oh,
have you seen the Merab skits with the fake Sean O'Malley?
The fake Sean O'Malley
so
videos.
Funny.
He's carrying him around.
He's so good. He's doing really well with it. Merab has become like an MMA, like... I don't know, like to quote like an Ariel Helwani phrase or whatever, like an MMA darling. Everyone's loving Merab.
Yeah.
No one's got a bad word to say about him. He's really funny. His videos are really good. And out of nowhere, Merab was in that room that we spoke about with Bilal and Ankalaev and all these people that, you know, desperately want in title shots, but they're not going to get them.
Yeah.
And Merab has kicked that door down, locked the other guys in behind him, and he's now walking into, hopefully, a title shot against Sean O'Malley. And he's done it with... real character and humour, and I've really been here for it. It's been really great to see.
And this fight, like, you're watching Figgy versus Cody Garbrandt, and it's opening the card. You are spoiled.
100%.
Like, we're so spoiled. It's absolutely fantastic because, you know, Cody's Cody, and I'm interested to see what Figgy can do in this division.
Yep.
And that's why I think I'd like to see him win. But... if you can have some big high-profile fights where Cody potentially gets to fight Sugar, then I want to see it, but I'd rather see Sandhagen fight Sugar or Umar. But I do think that it's so marketable, isn't it, Sugar, Cody Garbrandt?
It's very marketable. It's not the right fight to make. If they made that fight, a lot of people, including myself, would be unhappy because I want to see... Sandhagen particularly and Merab obviously next.
Absolutely.
But there will be people that will want to see it, and it'll, you know, it'll be an interesting lead up to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
What we haven't mentioned, it's not even a pay-per-view in the UK, and I'm loving that.
Is it definitely not a pay-per-view?
No, I had a look this morning.
Oh my God, that's fantastic. Well, I think we're getting a pay-per-view in
July.
You're
making me doubt it now.
Well, no, I when we've spoken to people from TNT before, they've said they usually try and do two pay-per-views a year. And one of them is bound to be, I think now what we're hearing is July is going to be a pay-per-view event. Dana White came out and said this. July is going to be a pay-per-view event in, I think, Manchester. Mm-hmm. The one thing I'm not sure of, but I worry, is it's going to be an American time. So if you're in Manchester and you want to go to that card, it might be like leaving at 5 a.m. or something like that. But still a pay-per-view, still be fun. Mm. And that means that that will probably be a pay-per-view on TNT Sports, I would imagine, because all the London and cards that can have been pay-per-views have been pay-per-views on TNT Sports. And then maybe they'll just wait till November for Madison Square Garden or December to see if John Jones is coming back or something like that and make that a pay-per-view. But I'm amazed that UFC 300 is not a pay-per-view. You would have thought.
I don't know if we're going to see John Jones anyway for a while. Yeah, I mean, I'm not being funny. If you get the call that you've got to go around and test John Jones, you're probably going to go, I'm all right at the moment, thanks. Yeah. I don't really fancy doing that.
Well, look, he's come out and said, well, I wasn't expecting to talk about this now. That's why we need to sort out like a thing where we do like just random news bits.
We'll do a news bit, yeah. We'll do that another time.
But yeah, John Jones has addressed the claims that police report was filed, as far as I'm aware. A female drug tester for, was it Free Sport or something like that? Whoever the UFC have replaced USADA with has gone round to his house. He looked intoxicated, and when the woman has tried to get a sample or something, he has threatened her by saying something along the lines of, do you know what happens to people that come to my house this early or something? I don't know. They end up dead or something like that. So he's effectively threaten someone's life. That's the claim in the police report and all that kind of stuff. But then he's come out and addressed the claims and said, this isn't all accurate. And there's even video footage, I'm assuming he's got CCTV on him on his house, of him leaving and like high-fiving the woman and all that stuff, because they did, I suppose, eventually get their test done. Now, it must be super annoying for athletes to be tested at all hours of the day, and sometimes they get it really wrong. I can't remember if it was Volkanovski or if it was Robert Whittaker or something who was tested the night before a fight at like 3 a.m. or something like that. It's like, you can't do that. That's really stupid. But that's the game you're in. That's how it works. You know, if you're having a few drinks, it should be fine. The only reason you should maybe be having a problem with someone drug testing you if you've taken something that's on the banned substance list. So that's where I think it should be worrying. Now, I've heard some people come out and say, well, look, he's high-fived her on the way out, so surely that's all nonsense and rubbish. I'm like, that's not how humans always work. It's very possible that she's really scared and nervous. And he said, come on, high five me. And she's just sort of done it, but then walked away and a few days later gone, hang on a minute. One of the most lethal human beings on the planet has threatened me and he's threatened to kill me in a certain way. Like, I'm going to report that to the police. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's very possible that that's happened. It's always difficult with these things because you're like, you've got one person saying one thing and then John Jones is coming out and saying something else. John Jones has a lot of history of bad behaviour. So, yeah, I don't always believe John Jones's excuses when he comes out with them. But at the end of the day, we have no evidence.
No.
We've just got what people are saying, and there's not really much we can do with that until the police get involved and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we have to just sort of wait and see what happens, really.
Totally. Thanks ever so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe if you're watching this show on YouTube. If you've not checked at what we do on YouTube, you just listen to the podcast, thank you. But why not head over to YouTube and check what we do? Because we get a nice little sort of visual representation of the fighters and such. But it does mean you have to tolerate our faces. Other than that, you can support us on Instagram at the MMA Fan Podcast, on TikTok, the MMA Fan Podcast, and on Twitter or X as MMA Fan Podcast. So go give us a follow, drop us a message, let us know what guests you'd like to have on, let us know what you thought of this episode, let us know if you agree with some of our picks, and we look forward to catching up with you next week to talk about how it all went down.
Laters.